Okay, I'm going to call the special meeting of Town Discovery Bay to order. If you please join with the Red Fleet and West Fleet.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
President Pease.
Here.
Vice President Leet.
Here.
Director Graves.
Here.
Director Simon.
Here.
Director Steele.
Here.
Okay, at this point of the meeting, it's open to public comment. The public can speak to us on anything that's not on our agenda. And we have a 3-minute time limit. Is there any public comments? Seeing none, I'll close public comments and turn it over to staff for the business and action items.
Thank you very much, members of the board. And first of all, thank you for spending an extra night. We very much appreciate it. We thought that we've come sufficiently along that it would be important to update you and then to get some feedback on some elements of the water meter installation project. So as much as there are a lot of slides, we plan on moving through those slides pretty quickly. And Dan and Virgil, I know there's room and microphones up here if you'd like to come on up. So the items we're going to go through, project information, logistics, schedule, outreach, budget, and an important item, the cost to the residents and billing options. Then again, as background, why are we doing this? This is required back in 2004 legislation, requires not only meters on all service connections by January 1, 2025, but also that we charge customers based on volume rather than on a flat rate. And actually, when I was doing some research, found a photo in the newspaper from Virgil back in 2009 with a water meter in hand and a big grin. And at that time, it was a decision of the board that the economy was really very tough. It had impacted a lot of residents, so they put the project on hold at that point. And so ultimately determined that meters would be installed this fiscal year. Project goals, ensure we're in compliance with the law, promote water conservation, and down you'll see the bottom, we expect approximately 3531 meters will be installed as part of this project. The original numbers were in the 3800, and as we've gone down and precised it, we are at approximately 3531. And this map shows you that the western section of Discovery Bay is already metered. That follows a previous law which required new construction be metered, and that continues to happen with new construction. And then what we're doing is completing the metering for all of the remainder of Discovery Bay. So I thought that that was a nice visual that certainly the western half of the town has been living with meters and has a lot of experience with meters, a lot of experience with billing. But those of us in the green section haven't yet had that experience, and so we will soon. Number of current activities, developing the phasing plan, the pre-construction logistical issues, and there's a lot of them, and Justin will talk about a few of those. Developing our outreach and communication plan, developing the inventory control system, ensuring that we have sufficient staffing, training, and organization, as well as budget and financing. Next up is the organization for this project. The project manager is Justin Chobe from Ludolfin Scalmanini. And then we've divided the grouping into four distinct areas that all interrelate. On the left side is construction management and inspection services. The construction manager will be Carl Wolf, the engineer from Ludolfin Scalmanini. And then for inspection services, the lead inspector will be Aaron Goldsworthy of our staff, and he'll be relieved of his other duties. Those will be picked up by Matt. And then we will have a secondary inspector from Ludolfin Scalmanini to the extent that we need it. As the project progresses and we find that we need the inspector, he will be there. As we find that it's not needed, he will be dropped off for days or weeks or whatever what have you. The staffing system that we have developed here is with the intent of being able to scale up or scale down as the project needs. The second portion is financial services, and that's led by Dina, the district's finance manager, and that's the accounts payable, receivable, project count, project tracking, and also billing services, which will be a very large and important part of this project, adding into the billing system the other 3,500 customers, ensuring that they get the experience with the bills, ensuring that their questions are answered, and that's bringing on an awful lot of people. So that will be a very big job. The third area is what we call public field services, and public field services will be led by Virgil, and I refer to that as clearing the road. And so Virgil's responsibility will be working to ensure all of our public outreach in advance of the project, that we're getting all of our notifications out, and that we're responding personally if necessary, face-to-face if necessary, with any resident that has any concern or question about their project. And about their property, and working out anything related to an individual property. The intent here is to bifurcate that from those people that are in the field so that they can move their construction as quickly as possible, and that all of the public issues are handled in advance. So hopefully construction speeds more quickly. And then the final area is inventory. And inventory, again, is led by Dina, and there will be a what we call the field implementation level. Inventory happens at a number of places, but there's a transfer of supplies and a record of the transfer that needs to happen. So we have staff there identified at the plant that will be transferring those supplies and signing them off and receiving all the correct signatures with the consultant. Back here on inspection services, there is a lot more that goes into each of these bullets than is actually listed here. And just an example will be under inspection services. What those inspectors are responsible for is pre-construction documentation, the quality of the work, inspecting the work that occurs, dealing with any problems in the field that they see, ensuring that the inventory is that is assigned to that property is in there, that is scanned, and that information is transferred over to billing, etc. So there's a lot of work that will go in on each of these. Down at the bottom, you'll see a group called Incoming Call Team, and the district has ramped up its phone systems. As we see that we're doing public outreach, there could be perhaps every 2 weeks another 600 correspondence that comes out of the district, either giving homeowners their first notice or their second notice. And we want to make sure that they're getting a live body and that they're not getting a recorder. I mean, I think sometimes there's nothing more frustrating than calling in and either being placed on hold or getting a recorder. So that's our team one. We do have a backup team if calls exceed their capability, but that's a team, and they will be all trained with frequently asked questions and all trained so that we can answer person to person the calls and the concerns of the public. Any questions on the organization? And then we'll move through, and I'll turn it over to Justin. And as we go through this, I'm hoping that if you have any questions either now or if there's issues that you'd like us to bring back to you on December 7th, we can certainly do so. We are hoping to get feedback from you as we go through this, so please stop us at any time. Okay, Justin.
Great, thanks. So, yeah, Catherine, I think you did a good job of kind of giving the overview of the project and describing the organizational chart with the different structures and the different team involvement for this project. And so thanks for doing that, Catherine. And she asked if I would just spend just time on this one slide basically discussing some of the logistical items that we're currently working on with the contractor. But first, just I kind of wanted to take a step back and just do a kind of a brief background on that. And as Catherine pointed out, it's pretty much the whole eastern part of the town where it's all water meters. So that's over 3,500 water meters, and the target completion date is sometime in June. So essentially, what that, and we're going to discuss this, what that means in terms of production rate is like 150 meters a week. So there's kind of a lot of activity that's going to be taking place in that period of time, which is why we're spending the time now to planning and structure the project. So when we originally went to bid on this project and we did a pre-qualification, we put that out publicly so that we can make sure we're getting the contractors that have the qualifications that we want to work with, devoid of whatever their costs are going to be. We wanted the quality contractors. So we did a qualification, and once we went through that, we did a bid process with those qualified contractors. And through the bid process, we landed on JW Backo as the lowest responsive bidder. The lowest responsible bidder with the most responsive bid, and they were the low bid. So the way the specs what was included in the specs were pay items for the contract, or bid items. And so most of the bid items are kind of, some of them are lump sum items, which is like mobilization and handling or stormwater control and things like that. But the lion's share of the bid was the meter installations, of course. And so there's about 3,500 meters, some change. And they were defined into four different types, and you've probably heard those before, but since that's going to come up in the discussion, I thought I'd just go through that again. But there's four types, essentially. So the first type, the type one, is what we call the drop-in meter. You open the box, and the plumbing is already there, such that you can just kind of re-plumb everything above ground within the box itself with the meter. And there's only a few hundred of those. And then we have the type two and three, which are essentially not that. There is digging and plumbing required. And what was planned for those in the specs is that the contractor would pull out the box and they would dig down to find the underground line that goes to the house, plumb it back up, and install a meter. The difference between the type twos and threes is the twos occur in softscape areas and the threes occur in hardscape areas. So the hardscape areas have been a focus of this project, I would say, because of the sensitivity to work being done in driveways, which is where the hardscapes are centrally located. So some of the logistical issues right now with the contractor relate with that, and that's why I just wanted to provide that brief background. But what we're working on right now is we're getting the contracting insurance and all that kind of stuff with the contractor. So that's all kind of standard. And then we're planning with the team and determining everybody's roles and how we're going to proceed with the contractor and the public outreach and the communication for this project. And so in meeting with the contractor, we've come up with a few ideas that's actually going to help streamline some of the construction. So one of them is
Sam.
You want to turn? Is
Say hi, Sam.
Hi, Sam.
Sam, come. Good boy. I mean, it's only 3 days. Give me a break, guys. Good boy. Give me a break.
I know it's kind of boring, but he gets better. It gets more exciting, trust me.
So a hardscape alternative we're working on right now to avoid the whole aspect altogether of soft is actually just digging within the box that's out there right now. And so we can determine that on a case-by-case basis when we pop the box and we see what the orientation of the valve is within the box and if there's space to actually do that. And so what we're kind of penciling out the assumptions with the contractor so that he could give us a cost to do that, because it'll be more labor essentially. He's going to be hand digging inside of a box to avoid all the saw cutting and everything that goes along with that. So of course it seems like it might be a little bit simpler in one sense because he's not saw cutting and pouring concrete, but literally he'll be hand dugging with a garden shovel, you know what I mean, to get down to the surface. But what we're avoiding is the replacement in kind of concrete work and the issues that may come about as a result of that. And these will be on a case-by-case basis as to whether a particular site is, you know, a good candidate for the solution, but we'll have a cost item in hand to use. So as the inspectors go through, they can just, on a case-by-case basis, say, can we do it in this case? Yeah, okay, we'll apply that bid item to this installation. Another thing that we're working on is we know there's going to be a lot of unknowns as we go in there, and they define what would be the basic installation with the contractor through those types, you know, the meter types that we define. So one of the most common, and luckily the contractor that was selected does have a lot of experience in the area, and Virgil as well has a ton of experience in the area. So I think as a team, there's a lot of knowledge and good ideas in there. So one of the ideas was, we'll probably run into valve failures because of the age and the condition of the piping. And that's probably one of the more common things we'll run into. So rather than having inspectors on kind of a construction management level have to kind of track time and material as these unknowns come up, if that's one of the more common ones, we're gonna have an item that will have the assumptions built into it that are gonna be, you know, the majority of cases. And just have an item for valve replacement, for example. So we're trying to kind of define a few of these, but knowing as we go, there's going to be a lot of just unknowns in the field that have to be, you know, taken care of in the field. So another thing we're working on right now is the inspection forms and procedures. And as Catherine pointed out, there's pre-documentation and post-documentation. I mean, those are really quality control mechanisms right there. That's building part of that database in terms of having, as we go through, information on what did it look like before and what did it look like when they left, when the inspector signed off on it. And so part of that relates with a database that we're putting together right now that's just basically, you know, glorified spreadsheets, but it's going to be the way that the project's tracked and managed to, as we go through these 3,500 installations, tracking the type of meters that were installed, the type that were 3A or 3B, the number of valves that had to be replaced, the problematic installations that, you know, the contractor's gonna have a set schedule, so he's gonna wanna make progress, and if he comes to an installation that will slow him down, he might decide, let's just button that up, and we'll come back and do the meter. Once we figure out whatever the issue is, we'll come back, and that could happen. So as we go, we'll be flagging those things, and, you know, we'll be updating our database, and so we can go to the contractor with the map every week and say, this is where you're at, these are the ones you skipped for reason X, Y, Z. We'll be working directly with, you know, public field services to be kind of the clearing of the road, so to speak, to know what issues might be run into tomorrow and the next week, and we'll feed that information back into construction. So that's kind of the logistics part of what we're working on the inspection phase. And I've actually got some forms for you, Virgil, today that I want to provide you so we can go over that in terms of inspection and the information we'll be collecting on the inspection. And then phasing is just, so with phasing, this is where we're at right now with phasing, breaking it out into seven phases, and each phase is approximately like 3 to 5 weeks of work. And originally JW Backo proposed a phasing strategy that was basically from a little bit different than this, is that it was seven phases that went from phase one and around in a clockwise fashion. And that I presented to the district, and then just today I got input that you know, there's reasons to maybe switch some of these phases. So we're going to run this new phasing here by JW, which is to do phase one and two, starting from the west side of the town over, which is, I think we think that is probably going to be some of the easier of the work will take place in those two phases, and then move on to three and four within the golf course, because the thinking there is there's tends to be larger lots, and so might be more water usage, so good idea to get kind of the meters in earlier than later for those, and so that people can start to see what the billing is going to look like, right?
Yeah.
And then phase five is the blue-white condos, which blue roof condos, which have just unique insulation, you know, versus the others. That's why they're their own phase. And then six and seven would be in the northern development. So this is where phasing is at right now in terms of the work. And other than that, I think I covered the stuff I wanted to talk about in terms of logistics.
Great.
We can move on to the next part of the.
Yeah, okay. I have a question on phasing. I know in a lot of water waste, a lot of meetings, we're going to check the PG&E on where they're at. Is that
it's been done? Okay. Yeah, and there's no inconsistency with any of this in the phasing. They're not planning on doing any work during this time period. So now we look like we're all clear, and And as Justin said, the phasing map 4 hours ago was a little bit different, so we'd like to get your input to see if you have any. But Virgil and I actually had a conversation, and we're talking about that the golf course does, in general, have larger lots, in general, more landscaping than you see in other areas. And so there really is logic in giving that portion, and not having that the last portion of Discovery Bay that gets the water meters. And so that was the reason that, a couple of hours ago we switched it and are looking at this. And we do need to go back and consult with JW Backhoe and make sure that they're comfortable as well with this change. And we didn't know if you had any input in this as well.
No, I okay. Leave it to the experts.
Yeah. I don't want to micromanage this.
Okay. And then the next on construction schedule, public outreach materials will begin, when I say early December, it'll be next week. Most everything is in draft and getting in final draft form. Construction is scheduled to begin the first week in January with substantial completion on May 31 and project completion in August. And based on this 150 per week, the project completion would be week of June 12th. And then I have, these are my words, the reasonable worst case substantial completion, which is, if you add 20% thinking that we might have 20 rain days, there might really be some extra things that happen. What would that mean? And that would take the substantial completion to July 15th. I really do think that, once we get within the first couple of months, we're going to see the pace. We're going to see how things can slow down and quicken up, where we might be able to save time, or whether this is overly ambitious and it's going to take perhaps a little more time. Now, there has been some discussion about and some interest in starting this and doing sort of a trial run in December. And that was raised at the wastewater committee. Could we start with 50 or 60? Sort of work the kinks out of the system, get everyone to do a trial run. And there's certainly a lot of logic to that. And Virgil spent some time going down Lighthouse and Bolinas, is that right? And identifying sort of streets, I think, with 71 homes that would be a good amount to do that. And want to make sure that, our perspective is there's good reason to do that there's bad reasons to do that. We first initially spoke to JW Backhoe. Their response was, thank you very much, we appreciate it, but no thank you. If we're gonna mobilize, we wanna mobilize and we wanna get going, and we don't want that sort of a hiccup. They did come back to us, I think, yesterday,
yeah,
and say, on second thought, if you guys want us to do this, we're open to doing it. At the end of the day, it's about 2 days worth of work. As we talk about it, you should know that there isn't a universal opinion on what the way is to go. I think Justin and I both share an opinion that we think starting in early January makes more sense. No matter what, you're going to have a day one and a day two and a day three and a day four. My concern is that the efficiency that it would give us, there would be a loss for the public. If we're out there on December 12th, December 13th, the kids are coming home from college. Folks are getting ready. It's a time when life is more filled than it should be. And that the advantage that we get, will be harder for the public. And so that's the thinking. Again, there's no complete right or wrong. If you feel strongly you want us to get out there for 2 or 3 days, we can certainly do that, and we'll do it. And as I say, there's real logic to doing it. But at the end of the day, my concern is with the public, and that's kind of tipping it for me. Does it just hit them at the wrong time? Wrong time of the year. So
I brought the item up, and I thought the reason that I did is just to help the contractor kind of get a feel, and we can see how fast they go, but more importantly, to get our staff up in the ball. We have a inventory system that we haven't done yet.
Yeah.
It gives us a chance to run 60, 70 units over a 2 week period, and then stop. Certainly, we don't want to be out there in the holiday season.
Yeah.
You know, That was the only reason, mm-hmm. to get us to see how much phone calls we get, see how they're moving down the street, see how our inventory's handed off, and then finding out wherever flaws are during that next 2 weeks period before January, that we have a chance to huddle and change our procedure or do whatever.
Before we get into full production.
Correct. So that was my thought. I don't know what the rest of the board thinks.
They're all good thoughts.
I think that you also have to take into account, number one, I think you're based on 150th a week is very, very optimistic. I don't think you're going to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. Watching what PG&E did, what MPI did, when they just did all the driveways, mm-hmm. seeing how many they did a day, you're not going to do 150 in a week. Mm-hmm. If you end up with 40% or 60% of the first week needing concrete work, you're not going to get them done in 1 week. Mm-hmm. The other thing you really need to look at, you're going to get some pushback from some other. You got a guy that's got a $100,000 front yard, and you're going to tell him, go rip your retaining wall down, take the palm trees out, pull your driveway up, and pull your... They're not going to do this without a fight. Mm-hmm. So I think you need to take that into account.
Mm-hmm. Well, and part of that, part of the response to that is not just the public outreach and communication. Part of it is the contractor. Right? We're working with them on some of those difficult installations, working in that box. So what our hope is when we pop the lid on those difficult installations, we'll you know, it's worth paying them the extra labor it takes to just dig inside that existing box, not rip it out, not cut anything out. You know, for those particular installations, and that will slow production down. You know, when you do it on those particular ones.
We believe that we have, you know, those type threes, it was 500 in the bid documents. We think maybe it's more likely 400. Yeah, something more like 400 out of the 3,500. And you're right, this is not going to be easy. It's like 3,500 mini projects hitting everyone. And when we look at the public outreach that we're proposing to do, where we're sending out letters to groups in advance, and then we send a second one maybe 10 days in advance, and then we're going to do a couple door hangers to make sure now they know your water is going to be turned off. On top of everything else, we're shutting your water when we're in your street. It's a true imposition as we go through and do this, and it's not going to be easy. One thing that we didn't mention as well is the experience that it's going to be like on the street as well. This isn't going to be a great experience. The contractor, in order to do the 150 a week, is proposing to have three teams.
Right.
And do you want to talk a little bit about the teams, and so that you get a sense as to the feeling on the street?
The way it was kind of described to me was there's going to be essentially three crews working in a train, and that'll be basically one team. And that crew will be like the first kind of identify and clear the area and dig out the box and expose everything that needs to be exposed. The next crew is the plumber, who basically does the installation and makes sure it's good to go before he moves on the next. And then the last crew behind him is setting the box, clean up, cleaning the street and everything. There might even be a fourth round, which would be the supervisor quality control of everything that was done. I mean, there will be on multiple fronts, but the contractor might have his own kind of elements of that too. But there would be three of those kind of in parallel. So, and each of those teams would be expected to do 7 to 10 meters a day. Mm-hmm. And so with three of those, they could probably get to a production rate of 30 plus a day. You know, and then again, since we're really fixed on schedule, when installations come up that appear to be problematic or slow the process, we might put that one on hold just to keep progress going. And we'll be flagging these on the map and tracking them as we go, and coming circling back around once we get a handle on the schedule of the project and everything else to really address those more problematic installations.
And one of Virgil's responsibility as leading the public field services is the individual that will go to the construction manager and say, I need you to bypass this house, or I do need you to bypass this street. He will be the one person in the district that doing all of that outreach work with the public is going to have the right position and the right information to say, I think it's prudent to bypass, say, this street or these four houses and these five houses. Tagging on to some of the difficult stuff, we should get probably right into Virgil's item. And we have some pictures that Virgil took today, and I can do this for you.
Fire away?
No, I'm handing this, you're talking.
Yeah, but fire away with the first picture.
Oh, you want me to go to the pictures, and then we'll go backwards. Okay.
All right. Here's an obstacle that we'll have. As you can see right at the edge of the sidewalk is a water meter box with the ice plant kind of growing around it, but we have a palm tree right in front there. The new meter box we're putting in, this is an older style, is a little bigger. So in essence, this palm tree needs to come out. And it also has a ball of roots. More than likely, that ball of roots is already inside that meter box already. That's going to have to be chipped out. Now, we're comfortable enough to know that this was not spec'd out to have a contractor cut that down. So this is one of the items that we'll probably have to go in front of the homeowner and say, homeowner, this tree, which really these type of fan palms are really like a weed in Discovery Bay, and more likely it just grew on its own and they just started to trim. Anyway, it needs to be removed. And so we would go in front of the homeowner, asking the homeowner to have this tree removed prior to the contractor coming in, removing that meter box, plumbing it, and so forth. Now, when we say plumbing, I want to make sure you understand, we're probably going to do a 2 to 3 foot area right around that meter box as a whole, take that box out, dig down at least 18 inches to maybe 2 feet to run the, to find the line that's running to the home, come back, put an elbow on it, come up, and join it into the meter. Because right now you have a curb stop right inside your meter. More than likely, it's maybe like with a little nipple, what they call a nipple on there. So an elbow comes straight down, then goes to the house. So you got to take that portion out, bring it back, and come in. So about a 2 to 2 foot square area that we have to dig down to redo that. Some areas that I've been checking, right, the curb stop where you turn the water off in the meter box, the pipe runs straight for a while before it drops. That'd be easy for the contractor. He's just got to cut it, put a bushing and a male adapter on it, tap it in, and he's good to go. But some of them will not be, a majority of them will not be that easy. This case here is a retaining wall, and this one here is 2 feet deep, or 17 inches tall, rather, and then it's got dirt behind it. So as I mentioned, I've got to go in front of that meter box a little bit to find the end, bring an elbow up and come in. So this retaining wall needs to come down and the dirt behind it needs to be removed. And this would be a candidate where I'd have to go to the homeowner, asking the homeowner that this section needs to be removed prior to us coming in. So this is just an obstacle. Here's another one. This one here, it's a stamped concrete. That little round lid is their water meter valve turnoff. Apparently there was a valve box or meter box there at one time. That meter box got replaced and this valve cover, like an irrigation box, got put there. As you can see to the right of that is a meter, but that belongs to another house. So in this case, more likely we may just dig in that gravel area there. If we have enough room or play in the poly pipe, we'll swing it over. If not, we'll have to notch that out, and we may even turn the meter box sideways to minimize impact. As you can see, that stamped driveway plus the color, more than likely we will never match that color because of the duration of the sun and the concrete. So it would be very tough for us to do on that particular case. So this one is going to be a challenge for us, and a couple, and this one's a little, I'll say a little easier challenge. But the ones who have a right in the middle of their driveway, the box, that's going to be tougher, where we're going to try to dig and try to do everything there rather than saw cut. So that's our goal on that one.
Virgil, before we move on, can I mention on this one that I believe, Justin, that the contract does not pay for our contractor to go back and attempt to match colors in any way?
Yeah, there was really no way to spec that in the kind of the time given. There's too many examples really to give somebody a bid, to have somebody bid on that in a competitive bid way. So we just included the basic concrete.
Basic gray concrete. That's
so
correct, okay.
We can certainly ask the contractor to provide a cost for that on a case-by-case basis.
That would be an additional cost to that particular homeowner.
Right.
Okay.
Well, the option was to have that homeowner have the ability to get his own contract.
Yes. Okay. An additional cost for that homeowner. Right. Yeah.
All right. Here's another irrigation box cover that's right next to the edge of the sidewalk. So at one time there was a meter box there, and they took it out, put that in there, and they built their retaining wall. And this is 2 feet tall, and so this retaining wall would need to either come out, or we may put the meter box sideways parallel to that sidewalk and do it that way. Until we dig down and see where that supply line is, that's going to be our that's going to govern us what we can do or not do, is that supply line where it goes to. And it's very hard to see when you lift that cover up. You've got dirt covering or debris. One of them today, I had a huge frog just laying on top of the pipe in the box. And I'm saying, wow, that's a surprise. He must be finding food because he was big in that box. But anyway, with the dirt and debris on there, you can't see where that pipe goes. And so until you start digging around to see, but this is a candidate, more than likely I will contact the homeowner, if that's up to the board, and have them remove that section of sound wall, or get a prep for us so we can put the meter box in. This one here is probably our most challenging one for the homeowner. And as far as I know, I only have one of these. That canary palm is at each end of their property here on the golf course. And the backside where you see the grass there, between the grass and the palm, you have that little bark there, area there. That's where the meter is. Most of that palm tree is already grown over the meter box. A good 3/4 to 80% of that meter box is covered by that palm tree right there. So being canary palms, they're very expensive trees. If you, option is, you take that tree down, it'll kind of leave the lot looking odd, because one's at the other end, one's at this end. Or the option is you dig in the street and you bring a brand new service to that homeowner. And this is, I've had dealings with this homeowner, or this board has had, not this board, but a previous board of the district has had run-ins with this homeowner before. More than likely, it will have to be him paying to cut a hole into the street, bring in a new service up until the turf area. Then we would tie in exactly to his service line there. And the estimate we got from JW on this, or the bid price, was $15,000 to do that.
For a brand new service installation. Yeah. Tapping into the water main, right.
So in essence, what you have to do there in front of that palm, you have to find the main, and this main is about 5 feet deep. You have to shut off that service going, that's going underneath that palm tree right now, and you have to tap into the pipe with a new service coming in, put a meter box, tie into the existing PVC line that runs to the house, and go from there.
Yeah, that would be a homeowner decision. If he did not want to take the tree down, and that's the only option that you have.
He'll have to take the tree down and the roots, because the roots are already, more than likely, I can't even get into the meter box here in this one, but more than likely that box is full of roots already. Palm tree roots tend to stay clustered together, and so it would be very difficult. Here's the other thing, looking long range wise, that palm tree roots, as it grows, it's going to apply more pressure to that water supply line, and more than likely it'll break it sometime. If it breaks it, like say right now, I have to shut down that whole street before I could fix it.
So if I can ask you this question, so we know going in that he's not laying down for $15,000. I mean, had a dealing with it before. No, I understand that, but you've had dealings with it before. I know who you're talking about. So when you go to him and tell me, my question is, how many of these do we have?
I think of only one right now.
No, but I mean, similar ones where walls got to come in. You said 500 of them?
Oh, no, the retaining wall?
Stuff like that, walls,
you just saw them
trees.
Oh, I don't think I have more than, I'd say 50 if the max, 50 if those oddball ones, the obstruction. Mm-hmm. I don't think I have more than that. I have a shrub, but the shrub can be out.
Yeah, no, I'm just talking about stuff like this where a wall's got to
the walls, yeah. As far as I know right now, I've only encountered 4 of those right now, but I haven't done all of Discovery Bay, but I don't believe.
Where possible on something like that, too, it'd be nice to pop the lid. You guys probably are happy to see if is it possible for somebody to even dig in by hand. Probably not where the tree is and you have the roots, or not where you have a non-standard box.
Correct.
You just certainly can't do that, but on something like that, on that one retaining wall picture, and I'll, you know, could possibly be a candidate for just...
Yeah, we will look at that. You know, that candidate right there, you can see there's probably like about a 4 to 6 inch gap between that sidewalk and that meter box there.
Right.
The only problem is fitting a human being in there.
Right.
You have to lay on that retaining wall, go down, and or find the really thin guy to go in there and dig it up. So that one there will be a tough one to do.
Right.
So there's a couple of issues, and we don't need to analyze each and every one of them. And that is that, first of all, either the original homeowner, and...
Well, we don't know the original, but they...
If they may be the original homeowner, and if that's the case, then we're well aware of the situation. It's just a matter of education. And if they're not the original homeowner, and the original homeowner planted something that was, or built the retaining wall to where it wouldn't be effectual, you know, they bought that condition when they bought the house, and I'm really sorry, but that's what you have.
That's correct.
There's just, I mean, there's just no ifs, ands, or buts. This is a situation we have to deal with. Hopefully, there'll be maybe one or two options. But again, the cost, it has to be, you know, honestly discussed with the homeowner,
yep,
estimated. And then there's always going to be two options. The option that we do it and charge them for it, and the option that he doesn't have it done himself.
I prefer them to, that option is for them to do it, so we don't get into a liability issue.
Well, like I said,
yeah,
there's always going to be two options at the minimum. There may be more options.
And I'm very frank, I like to be upfront with them way in advance as possible, because it's going to cost them money. And I'd rather us, while we're still behind, you catching up to them,
right,
have that work done before the construction team,
yeah,
got to them.
Right.
And if not, we'll pass them and then come back to them.
Right.
Well, it looks like you're talking about, you know, 1.5 to 2% of the
correct
things
here. So I think we shouldn't get lost in the discussion of the 1%.
Right.
We should be making sure that we get 90% of the people you can blast through and take care
right
of them. And then if you run across this palm tree, we'll skip that house and move down the street.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll deal with this individual and this property and this difficulty as we go through the process, but not slow down anything for the other 99%.
That's correct.
Agreed, but I do, and good point, and I agree with that 100%. I just think that the other side of that is exactly what you guys just said, and that is we need to inform them as soon as possible that this is going to be an issue in the next 2 to 3 months.
Yeah.
And
right. And that's why we have the whole
right
section of public field services
right
that Virgil is leading. So let's go back in front of those pictures and just say, okay, what does this mean? Okay, so what's included within the base budget? And so base budget word should mean that is what is going to be charged back on everyone who's a participant in this water meter program. You know, myself included, I get a water meter. What's included in that and what will be charged back? So it's the cost of the meters, the meter boxes, the cost of our contractor, and the cost of project management. It's the cost of returning the landscape and the softscape back to basic condition. That means we're going to replace the sod, the bark, the rocks. We will set them aside, put them back. Things that are easily removable, we will remove it and put it back to that basic level. Now, during the bidding process, this varied. And by location in the community, some for the installation portion were as low as $100. Some were expected to be $290, and the ones that are in the driveways, the hardscape, not talking about the extras that are homeowner to be paid for that we just went over, were expected to be $950. And so, and then we say there was the one at $15,000. So the question that I just want to make sure that we are all in line with is what we've called the type ones through type three, that all of these are included within that base budget. It is exceedingly difficult for us to go and create an individual budget for every single property and try to cost that out. And we do believe that those homeowners that had a box put in their driveway, it's not their fault. It's in their driveway, it's in their landscaping, that was not an activity. That is different from homeowners who have taken something that's in the right of way and either allowed something to grow that is blocking access, or they installed something, or they purchased something that was installed. That's a different situation. And the process here would be that would not be included in the base cost, meaning everybody wouldn't share in the cost because you built a retaining wall on your property and it may cost you know, $3,000 to remove it and place it back.
Okay, so the question I'm seeing on the next slide is, does the board concur that type 1 through 3 should be included as a base cost?
Yes.
But you're not telling us, when you're giving us these numbers, what's 1 through 3?
You're right, I didn't. I'm so sorry. 1 is the 100, 2 is the 290, and 3 is the 950.
Okay. My problem is we have 3,531.
Right.
Right?
Yes.
So 531 are three times as much as expensive or greater than the other 3,000. Why are the 3,000 going to subsidize the 500?
That's a great question. And in those cases, the decision was, there's probably about 400 of them. Those are hardscape that the property owner did not do anything to make anything worse. It was not a choice of theirs or any previous property owner. It happens that the box is in the driveway. It's in a hardscape versus that the box happened to be within a softscape. They didn't add anything.
You know, yes. if it was a $200 difference,
mm-hmm.
I get it. But to subsidize $650, double what it would cost mm-hmm. you for your home, to somebody for these 500 individual items that are a thing, I'm not comfortable with that.
Let me ask a question.
Yes.
If you take the 3,000 that are in this 1 and 2, and we're saying, well, just divide it by the 3,000, and that's the cost, right? If you add the 3 in there, what does it change?
$67. And the other thing that I would add that I should have said before, the reason why some of the ones are $100 or $290, maybe $290, is because the district has gone out in previous years and has done some repairs and placed a box in. It would be difficult for us then to go back and track every one of those and research where did we spend time on your property.
We
might have spent $3,000. That would take an immense amount of effort, which is why we came up with this 1, 2, and 3. Not the 15,000 person, not anything extra, is all within that spread.
$67 is way different than hundreds of dollars. And to figure out 500 of them exactly what it costs is going to be more than the 67. We're going to spend more money trying to figure that out than we would saving the $67.
Well, what did staff come up with as far as the number?
Yeah, we don't
Let's assume for a moment that the board concurred 1, 2, and 3 for all the base costs.
What is
the base cost?
There's your base cost. So the product, $1.288 million. That's the meters, the lids, the readers.
I'm talking about the homeowner.
Is it $100 or $500 or $600?
It's about, if it is
the 311, 359,
I think it's like 875. 881.
Okay, so every home, if we mm-hmm. charge every home, mm-hmm. the 3,531 homes.
Right.
$881. That takes care of it.
Yes.
Of all that.
Yes.
And then the difficult ones that are in a stamped concrete area, the homeowner will be responsible to match his concrete or take it out.
If they wish to.
If they wish to. If they don't, we'll take it out, but we're only going to put
back gray back. That is correct.
Correct. Now, same issue on the, let's say, the palm tree issue. That's extra labor that we had. If that homeowner doesn't want to take that palm tree down, what do we do?
Well,
we can
personally we could take it out ourselves. It's within our easement area, utility right away, so you could take it out. We'll pay for it, but then either build them back for it. I would think you build them back for it. They don't pay, you put a lien on their property. But that would be an option.
It's up to him, the property owner.
That's the right answer, though. Yeah. That's the answer to your question, and I agree with it 100%. We have to maintain authority over what we're doing here.
The least expensive is for the homeowner to do it, because we have prevailing wage. We have to pay. It's a higher wage than they would.
But I can see a hypothetical. I can see where you're going with that, and it's a great question, because there may be the individual that says, you know, there's always the guy that says, sue me, right?
That's right.
I'm willing to fight it. What's our recourse at that point? And our recourse is exactly that. We do the repairs. We do the repairs the least expensive we can. As aesthetics aside, we do it the least expensive way we can, and the most feasible. And that might be avoiding the palm tree. It doesn't necessarily. But whatever decision you come up with as a construction team, that's what we do. And then we lean the property for the balance, and they can't sell that home until they.
We get our money when they sell it.
Right.
And our approach has been on all of these things that it's in the right of way. It's the homeowner's responsibility to keep it clear and free so we can access the right of way, and that's their obligation, and they should have responsibility and take care of that. If that doesn't work, there's the next.
Let me go back to what Director Lee was talking about earlier. So you're saying $67 just to get this 1, 2, and 3 thing kind of put to bed. $67 because that's amortized over 3,500 units.
Right.
But if you were to $67 times 3,000, yeah, then that 950 becomes exponential to that homeowner, to those 500 homeowners. It becomes much greater than 950, right?
No.
It'd still be 950 to them.
No.
You're
taking that $3,100, that $3.1 million, and dividing it by 3,500 and saying we're good. And so the guy at the low end is paying $67
less.
Okay, but that was perfectly understood. That's not what I'm saying.
Okay.
If you were not to do that, if you were not to subsidize the 500 of which is a small percentage of the entire project, if you were not to subsidize that, what would it cost those 500 people for their meter box? Would it be the 950?
It would be the 9.
It would be the 800
plus the 950. I was going to say it'd be a lot more than 950. That was my point.
Minus the base amount, so it would have been probably another like $700 on top of the 800. They'd probably be looking at, I'm guessing,
$1,500
instead of an $800 bill, right?
Well, yeah, because
that's good enough. I just want to get an idea for it and figure out. I'm opposed to subsidizing people. It's by nature. I'm opposed to having an individual that's not getting anything out of it to subsidize somebody that has a situation that's different.
$500 more.
So it'd be 14.
Yeah, because this is when we talk about the 100, 290, and that we're only talking about the portion for the contractor. Not the meters and the readers
and all of that other work that is
in there. So yes, yeah.
If you take the 950, 500 and 950 out of the $3.1 million, then you could figure out
what
the type one and type two.
Right.
But see, type one is subsidized. Subsidized.
Yeah, but that's within a
that's
a couple hundred, not within 700.
That's right.
Big difference.
Yeah, well, the other issue too, like Stack mentioned, that. On the ones that are the $100 ones, they could have been a $900
they
one.
They could have been. We don't know whether they were or they weren't, so
I understand that, but they possibly could have been. We've already done the work, it didn't cost them anything to get them down to the $100.
That could be the fact, but we don't.
Right.
So we have to make some assumptions. And my feeling right here.
I know one was put in my front yard that didn't take, it was $100.
Well,
they came in, they put the meter in, they were done in 45 minutes, and they were gone. So there's plenty of those in town, I'm sure. And no work had been done at my house prior to that in the last 22 years anyway, because I've lived there that long. So I hate to assume that we've already been at these homes and give that benefit of doubt. Let's just talk about what we do know. And what we do know is that there's three different, there's these different costs that we need to buy. And I'm just stating my opinion.
I'm not in
the pill that I need to swallow, probably. You know what I mean? That's all I'm doing. That's my responsibility.
Well, I want to be able to, and it's unfortunate some people have a more difficult installation, but being this is state mandated, mm-hmm. I want to try and treat the entire community the same, to get us, everybody's paying the same for their meter, whether it's an easy one or a hard one, and then the extraordinary stuff that's over mm-hmm. and above that, the homeowner's going to have to foot that. That's mm-hmm. what.
So if we go to this next chart, this just, sorry to beat a horse here, but again, what's not included within the base project to make sure you're in agreement. So removal and replace and possible replacement of synthetic turf that's blocking access. They would be requested to have their contractor remove and restore it. Removal of trees within the right-of-way blocking access or interfering with construction. Removal and replacement of retaining walls. And when I say a mailbox, it's not a single post. It's, you know, they have the big decorative or other obstructions. And again, the matching of hardscape material and color after replacement of the meter box, we just cannot have that responsibility.
One more question.
Yes.
On this subject. Catherine mentioned something. Virgil, you've been here since the last canal was built. Those homes that are in the hardscape, those homes where the surface goes to the hardscape, because of the way the home was built by the contractor, the homeowner had no choice but to put the box there because of where the garage was located. Is that correct?
You're going to find here, we have a lot of cul-de-sacs or courts.
Yeah.
And so most of the hardscapes, hard ones, are in that pie shape.
Because they had a very narrow
drive entry. Okay.
See, and that helps justify, you know, like you said, Catherine, it's really not their fault.
It's a
situation of circumstances. Put them there and makes it a little easier pill to swallow.
Yeah, so majority of them are that
way. Back to the question at hand.
So here we go. So in addition to paying what we're calling fair share project cost, the previous site conditions that you saw, the retaining walls, trees, will have additional costs for certain homeowners, and it's their responsibility to resolve the issue prior to the meter being installed. And so the question is, do you have outstanding concerns or any questions about this approach? I want to make sure that you're in agreement with this as we're moving forward.
I would look for you for guidance on a decision on that. They're looking for guidance here. Does the board?
Guidance is, I agree. Whether the rest of the board agrees.
Well, I think we need to do that through a vote, probably, or at least through a consensus, right?
Is that consensus?
We'll just go down the road.
Yeah.
I'm in agreement.
Agreement? Thank you.
I'm in agreement.
Thank you, because Virgil is going, and Virgil's going to be the one that is going to be carrying out this issue.
Because we have a bulletproof vest
to everybody.
Extra large. Extra large.
Okay, and not to be outdone by the person who's responsible for making sure that bills go out and bills get paid. So another
before she starts,
difficult.
Let me make sure. There are 52 units that will not have a water meter connected to them. And that is Sand Bay Isle. Mm-hmm. Sand Bay Isle has 52 units plus a clubhouse, which makes it 53. I went back and did some research on that trap that created that. The Board of Supervisors at that time in the late 80s, early 90s, established that the HOA was responsible for their water, and that the Sanitation District 19 was not. Hence why, if you look along a River Lake and Standpoint, they have backflow devices on the outside of their fence, comes into their property, and so we plan to just put 9 2-inch water meters on the outside of that, servicing those 53 units, and it's up to that HOA management if they want to, what they call sub-meter, where they put an individual meter, because those condos do not have a separate shutoff switch. The only way I could do it is I go out in the fence line on the street, I shut down a backflow, and it takes out anywhere from 5 to 10 units offline at one time. So I just want you to be aware.
The 53 units there?
52 plus the clubhouse.
Okay. So are those 53 units included in the share cost?
No.
Well, the cost to
well, there'll be those separate meters. Those meters were part of this contract, but those meters, because they're
okay, so those meters would be built directly to the HOA over there, and then they're going to have to worry about how to get the money from the homeowners within there. But those 52 are not included in the 35.
That's right, and I've already pre-warned them about that because I know they're a little short.
They're not getting meters, so I guess they can't be included.
Well, the HOA.
That's going to be their headache. We don't have that headache where I am.
They save money up front.
Will we see the checks on all 9 meters every month to the HOA?
Huh?
we'll receive a check every month from the HOA for the 9 meters.
Just like you pay on 3 meters in our place right now for landscaping.
Yeah, there's three of them there already.
How they collect is up to them.
Yeah, and it, go ahead.
And did you want to mention about the water infrastructure repair that was taking
place? Oh, thank you. Yeah, thank you very much. I should have mentioned that. When we go back on the budget here, you'll see the note. The contingency is relatively small. I don't know if you noticed that on a construction contingency, a relatively small amount that we put when we're just starting out on the project. I have a small contingency for the staffing as well. We need to include mailings and things like that. But in this case, by some staff's estimate, they believe in some sections of town, when we open the box, about 1 out of every 10 is going to leak. Those leaks would have happened anyway at some point. And we believe that those water leak repairs that we find throughout this system, if you just touch it, it's going to leak, that those should be funded the same way that they are currently funded, and that is through the Water Infrastructure Repair Fund, if I'm saying it right. Water Infrastructure Repair Fund. It will not be part of the project, thank you, base budget. It will not get charged back as part of the, if we say it's $880, it will not be charged back to homeowners that way. It will be paid for through the district's reserve fund.
Yeah, and in essence, it'll be done cheaper at that point anyway, because we're already there than if we had it done and had JW do it on an individual basis.
It depends on the type of water leak. You know, obviously, we trying to keep up with the 150 a week is what we got kind of targeted.
Yeah.
So we may put a Band-Aid on it just to stop the leak. A lot of times today, if I come across a leak, I take some hose clamps and a rubber, wrap it around there, tighten it up. It'll last me for a couple of days, if not a few weeks, then come back and dig it up and do it the right way. So we may...
Have we forecast any kind of a dollar amount for what you think this is going to be?
She has in there, so I think she put in there $131,000.
That's the construction contingency.
That would be a contingency that would occur in the base amount. So something that the contractor is having to do that doesn't involve construction. It's something that involves maybe landscaping or some superficial feature, right? But when we're talking about the piping, the condition of piping, and it doesn't fit the bid item for just a drop-in meter or the plumbing that was defined in there because maybe the pipe is brittle,
something
falling apart, or the valves are leaking. So it's got to do extra work, so we'll track that extra work that's associated with repairing that infrastructure. But the way that it's been conceived here is that won't be funded through the meter project.
I understand it, but my question is, if you know going in, that one out of every 5 is going to leak, and you have to fix it, why not forecast it in addition to the cost of this installation?
Right. So there should be a separate item that factors that in and separates that from what's called the base budget, because the base budget is what's being used as how the project's going to get funded with the bills going to the customers for the installation.
Will do it. And we will be able to give you an answer because it's one of the things that we're working with JW on. What's the leak? So that very quickly in the field, the inspectors can authorize the repair of that leak. We don't have to do it. So that will be done, and we can bring that back to you what that cost will be. We've asked them for what their hourly rates are to do that, and we'll have some assumptions. So we can bring that back to you. But I did want to make sure that you noted Justin was correct, that portion is assumed, and that's what I think this year we spent. It was over $400,000 on that. That would be included through that same funding mechanism. But we will come back to the board with that. But we're working on that. And then now we will turn it over to Dina.
It's the fun stuff now. All right. So I'm just going to go over a little overview of our billing system. We use Casell. I think most of you know we use Casell Connect, the Casell Utility Management Suite. We import the reads from our AMI Beacon Orion reading system, and that imports into Casell. Casell then calculates, based on our rates and their usage, their bill. We export that out into a file and send that out to Freedom Mailing. They are in Utah, and then they send out our bills, and we collect the money. Our utility bills are in arrears, so I don't know if you all know that, but we close the month, we do the billing process, and we send out the bill. An example of our bill is on the next slide, and I actually provided one for you on your table. When I first got to the district, I revamped the bill and I created this one. It's fairly clear. It has your account number, your due date, your total amount due, and it shows a little graph of your water usage for the year. Then it just shows your line items, your previous balance, how much usage you used the previous year in the same month, your payments received, any adjustments that were made, and any past due amounts, and then your total amount due. We do have a little perforated edge right down here that you could pull, you cut off and send in your payment. What we did was about 2 years ago, we installed Express Bill Pay. So you can pay online or you can call over the phone. It's no expense to the customer. So it's very convenient, it's very simple, it's very easy.
And there's an auto pay, correct?
And they do have auto pay. I use auto pay. It just tells you when it's time, when it's due, it tells you your bill, it sends you a text, and you push okay, and it goes right and you pay. One other great thing we have, if we could flip to the next slide, is we just sent out our utility portal. So our new Orion Reader system and our AMI system created an Ion Water utility portal. So this is your customer portal. It's up-to-date information. It can alert you via your mobile devices if you have a leak. It can show you your usage up to a daily basis. And you can sign up. We sent that out last month with our utility bills for 2,100 homes. We had about 1% sign up, so 21 people. So it's actually pretty cool. Virgil, I think you use it, right? I use it. I know a couple of others in the district that live in the area use it as well. It does show you everything. It shows you graphs. It can show you your usage up to, you know, every day. It's a pretty neat tool. So I encourage everybody to sign up. We just installed this and sent this out last
month. Is there any history that was loaded up with it, or did it start from day one and you start developing your history as you go?
Yeah.
Okay.
It does hold history, though. It does.
Well, it will, so, but it didn't download any previous history.
After I had it for about a few weeks, it sent me a text message indicating I had a leak in my home. And so the toilet flapper in the toilet was slowly seeping water out. So as water is moving through that meter for 24 hours straight, it indicates you've got a leak. So it texts you. So I went to Supply House, bought a new flapper, put in. I got a text message back. A few minutes later, leak is fixed. Yeah.
It can fix leaks also. We're working on that.
Yeah. But I think what's so great about that this system is, given the number of people that travel in our community, maybe have vacation homes, being able to get this information on mobile devices, that something's going on in their home is, I think it's an upside. Even though we've been talking about the potential negatives all night, there really are some really great things as part of this.
Yeah, it's great for landlords also, so they can keep monitor their property. It is great for those residents that don't live here year-round. So it's very exciting. So this will be up and running, and we'll have been able to test it out a little bit, get some customer feedback before we roll it out to the rest of the development.
One question I have, let's assume for a moment that the homeowner doesn't want to get into this one at all. The town still will be notified that there's a leak.
That's right. We have on our end, we get notifications also.
Well, your phone's going to be going off like crazy, Virgil, with all those texts.
No, my phone. We haven't come in on the email then.
Yeah. Yes, we'll
it's
actually.
Report, I would imagine.
Yeah, so those residents that didn't sign up for this, she can actually, if they complain about their water bill, it's too high, I didn't use this much water, there's no way, she can actually look to the day or even the hour of when there was a spike in usage and help them out that way. So whether it was a leak or no, they really did use that much water. So do you have a pool? Yes, I do. Did you fill your pool? Yes, I did. Well, there's exactly when you did it. I can tell you when. So it's a very useful tool for both the town and the residents. Okay, to our new baby, which I'm actually very excited about, played with it a little bit last week, is our new inventory. So we purchased a WASP barcode reader, and with that we also got the printer so we could print out barcodes ourselves. But okay. So this actually imports the barcodes into Excel. So I didn't have to buy a program for it. I created an Excel spreadsheet and we tested it out. And what the coolest thing is that it actually reads the barcodes that came on the meter. So the serial number there. So we were playing with the boxes and we can scan the box, we can scan all the meters in the box, and we can scan the reader. So what's great about that is not only can we see our inventory, we can track when it goes out, and we can track exactly when it goes in the field. So I ordered two barcode readers, one for the person that's going to be taking in the inventory and checking it out, and one for Aaron, the inspector in the field. So when it goes in the ground, he goes click, click, and we got that exact information in the field. We sync it up with their APN number, which is their address. And we just upload it then into Justin's system, hopefully, where he can pull out some data and information. And it makes it simple for us to also upload into our CASEL system. So it's actually a cool tool. We're playing with it, seeing how fast it'll read and, you know, go from page to page. So the Excel spreadsheet that I created the meter and reader tab. It also created the bricks. We're going to do those by pallet. We're not going to do a sticker on each individual brick. We're going to do it by pallet. So when the contractor takes the pallet of bricks, they're now responsible for those bricks. When they take out their meters and the readers, we're going to click them out onto a spreadsheet. We're going to print the spreadsheet and have them sign off that they've received it. And now they are responsible for that that inventory. So,
good job.
Yeah. So it's kind of exciting.
And just a final on the inventory, you could see Dina was the perfect person to be in charge of the inventory controls. I knew she would bring this one home. The product that we had is listed as at $1.28 million. So that's a lot of product to have within the district. And it's important that we have exceptional tracking and that the custody is transferred between the district to the contractor, and that if it's lost off their truck, that's their responsibility. And when it's received and it's back in our custody is when Aaron swipes it, then it's ours back again. So this was a great job, well done. So that's good work on that. Okay, next, public outreach and communication. I have a two-page sheet in front of you at your table as well. It talks about the public outreach and communication plan. Carol Rudy, if you could raise your hand, has come to the district for this project from a temporary staffing agency, is going to be working with Virgil. She will be Virgil's eyes and ears and throughout the process to provide the support as he goes in and as we send out all the information to the public and we listen to what they're saying, and Virgil goes out and does that face-to-face contact and records and logs what's going on and what the resolution of everything is, and she is key to that process. So our goal on the public outreach communication plan is that we be as personal as possible with the residents in the community, that they receive an answer to the phone calls when they come in, they don't get put on hold, hopefully, that they receive a live body, they receive, hopefully, quick answers to their questions, and if we're unable to answer those questions, that we have a district employee who will go to their home and will talk to them personally and look at whatever the circumstance is on an individual case-by-case basis. So key on that was to develop a staffing plan, and that's in here. The logistics, our phone system has been upgraded to take care of this. We have drafts of newsletters all ready to be finalized. And in here, you'll see down at the bottom of page one, we have information for the entirety of the area that will receive meters. So it will have a broad distribution, which is open houses at the community center, dedicated information on the district's website, monitoring social media, working with our press who's here tonight, and thank you very much, Dawn, and information posted on the website. Then there will be targeted information going back to our phases, and that is expected to be a 30-day letter sent to the upcoming 300 to 450 homes, informing them that they're within the next phase, providing our frequently asked questions, and encouraging them to call us with any concerns. followed by a two-week letter giving more specific information about what to expect when construction also happens. Then there will be two series of door hangers, currently at 10 days and 24 hours, but Virgil and I have talked. We'd like to get a modification to that, we think might be better, and Virgil has some great ideas about some simple language on door hangers that I think we should make sure that we get done. And then finally, this personal contact, so personal outreach to the homeowners. So, and I have down here response to residents. It's our desire to respond personally to questions and concerns about the project and the impact. The system will be provide information, listen, let's understand what issues are coming up, let's modify our distribution materials, and then resend again. And it is our hope that we will be communicating and communicating and communicating until in some ways people say, yes, I know everything about it. I think I don't need you anymore to do it. So that's here. If you have any questions about that or comments, I'd love to hear them. We also have, Carol worked on a draft of the first of a newsletter to be sent out as well. These would be routinely done, and we look for a number of places to send this out. But again, the approach is personal contact with district staff. I believe that this is a different approach from what other communities have done, where they've relied on contractors to do the interface with the public. Here we are, our approach is to have district staff handle that interface because we have those long-term relationships with the public. So any questions on that or comments?
I think staff has done an excellent job of thinking through all the possibilities and also getting the information out to the residents.
So this will start to get rolled out. If you say yes today, it's tomorrow, literally tomorrow and Friday, we will be finishing things up and starting the issuance of letters and newsletters. So we will be pulling the trigger, so to speak, very, very quickly here.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you. Okay, next I'm going to turn it back to the what we call the payback. And that again, Dina, as finance manager, gets to deal with those issues.
Okay. So previously, I think in the finance committee meeting and in the water wastewater committee meeting, we discussed putting the payback on the water bill. We discussed, a couple different terms and some other things, and I'd like to offer another suggestion. After thinking about that a little bit, I was thinking of putting it on the tax roll. So I have a couple different scenarios for that, and some of the reasons for that would be a little bit of ease for our billing system and managing how those payments are going to come in and monitoring that. Also, a little bit ease for the customer as well, is that not having to pay so much on a monthly basis out the door. So if we could kind of look at some of my scenarios, I have it attached to the water meter bill, and so we'll look at scenario one. Scenario one, as you have seen before, it is the assumes a monthly water bill payback. Okay. And so what I did was I highlighted four years, up to 1 to 4 year payback, and what those dollar amounts will be. So we're assuming right now that we're going to be spending, $875, $890 per meter, maybe $900, okay? So if we look at the 12-month line, that's with 1 year, we'll look at the low column. We're looking at about $72 a month added on top of your average water bill of $43.19 a month, on top of the reader charge, okay? And that total would be $128.11 a month for an average water bill. Okay, that's to pay back in 12 months. Going down the line, if you look at the 24 months, the 36, and the 48 months, that's what it would cost.
Run that?
Sure.
That figure?
Sure. So we're looking at $875 to pay that back within 12 months. We're looking at $72.92 a month for the meter installation, okay? Plus, on that bill will also be their average water bill, their reader charge, that total would be about $128.11 a month.
Okay. Those numbers don't exist on the piece of paper I'm looking at.
It was stapled incorrectly. I'm sorry. It was stapled incorrectly. It's this one that I'm looking at right here. It's the monthly.
So you're looking at 100, what'd you say, it was 101 a month?
About 128
a month. But you, does this include putting the meters on the month, on the tax bill?
No, I'm showing you the monthly. If we put it on the water bill, this is the first scenario, if we put the meter on the water bill, what the water bill charge could be.
Okay.
Okay.
So at the end of the first year, their bill goes back down to $43 plus the meter reading charge. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah, it goes back to
$55. Yes, it does. Okay. And then those options are, I just highlighted 12 months if it was 12 months to pay back, 24 months, 36, or 48. Okay. And then, Bill, you asked a question, where would we fall within the region? We would be the second highest in the region for water services if we use this scenario. Okay. Whereas currently we're at the bottom without the meters. Okay.
Once it's paid back, where would you be?
Back down.
Near the bottom.
So, uh-huh. So you can't correct. Say that you're the second highest, because right. You're really not.
No, we're not. It's just included if we paid on the monthly bill, you would ask the question. Yeah. Right. For a year, we would be the highest in the region, bill-wise. Okay? All right, so now let's look at the next scenario. I'm going to show you what it looks like, this one.
Next rate study, nobody doesn't show up.
Okay. So this next scenario then is if we put it on the tax roll, okay? And I did a couple different scenarios here. I did a 12-month payback, 24-month, 36, and 48 again. The cost of the meter project, we're assuming it's going to be the $875, okay? I assumed just that number for this scenario. To pay back the meter project on the tax bill, it would be $875 on the tax bill. Plus the account charge. We can't forget now they're going to be getting an account charge. That's a new charge for them as well. Okay, and that's going to be $194.40. Then their estimated annual water bill is going to be about $518. They're going to be getting that received by a bill, a water bill in the mail on a monthly fee. They're going to get their reader charge, which is $12. And their total cost for a 12-month period then for all water services would be $1,599.68.
This would be a one-time charge on their tax roll?
The $875, yes.
So here's my problem. We're trying to compare yearly and monthly costs here. You right. gave me monthly costs mm-hmm. for the first scenario, and you gave me yearly costs for the second scenario. So how do I lodge, without me doing a division by 12 for every one of these numbers, it's hard for me to compare those.
The first one is if you paid it out of your pocket.
I get that. But second one, you're also paying out of your pocket.
No, $133.
You are paying out of your pocket for the last three items every month. Correct? It's $15.99 divided by 12. Is that what it is?
Well, I guess you could look at it that way. Yes, it would be $15.99 divided by 12.
Okay.
Dina, can I ask a question?
Sure.
On the current customers receive, there's an element for water that is being flooded into 7 areas.
That's right.
What is that water element?
On the tax roll right now, currently what they're paying is $552.36. So they're used to seeing that on the tax roll already. The new charge would be an account charge. They're not used to seeing that. So
What's the account charge? The account charge is an annual charge
that we charge for any repairs, for services, for Aaron, Virgil. It's all of that consumed into one. So replacement of a meter, if it needs to be replaced, replacement of a reader. So that is an annual fee that is being charged.
Now, if 5 years, 10 years down the road, that account charge will be on the monthly bill. It could be on the tax bill. It could be on the
That's right.
Bill. But if we went to the, if we said just for the element of this conversion to water meters, if we left it on the tax bill for 2, 3, 4 years, whatever, and then we could transition the water bill plus the reader charge on their monthly bill, and then as the meter project winds down, we could probably move this account charge over to the fill as well, and then we're done with the county in terms of water charges.
You could, but the account charge for, even for my bill, is still on the tax roll.
Okay.
So we have left it there.
Okay,
it's
so
just,
agree.
So we would leave it there.
So people at the Lakes and Lakeshore, as an example.
It's on my tax roll.
It's on the tax roll.
Okay, that's
so
correct.
And we should keep
yes.
that the same for everyone.
We should.
Yes.
And the only people that get the account charge on their bill are the large users, the businesses in
yeah.
towns. That's it.
Okay.
So
all
residents get it on the tax roll. Yes. That's okay. Where was it? Okay, so 24 months, if you wanted to pay it with over 2 years, it would be $437.50 for the meter on their tax roll. They would get their account charge of $94.40 on the tax roll. Their water bill would not be on the tax roll. It would be sent to them monthly via that bill. And along with their reader charge would also be sent on that bill. Their total cost for the year for water would be $1,162.18 for year one, if you wanted to do a 24-month payback. For year two, it would increase due to the percentage increase that we have for the rate of study. So, the rate increase.
I think you're creating a monster.
Okay.
I really do. It would be so much easier to just send them the bill, tell them this is what your charge is for the water meter.
Okay.
And agree on how many months you want to bill them for. On your very
okay.
first bill, you have one option. Either pay the thing off completely or pay it for 12, maybe up to 36 months, and let people decide how they want to pay it.
So,
but
it would be a
50% of the people are going to throw that thing in the garbage, and we're going to spend hours and hours and hours chasing down those accounts versus leaving on the tax roll. It's automatically collected through the taxes. It's done.
Why did you chase any? Like, you just send a water bill every month. They get a water bill. It's got the bill for the meter, and they get
a $50 bill. It's one thing. They get an $800 bill. It's going to be a different discussion altogether.
It's going to be a one-time bill, or they can spend over 36 months. I mean, you got people, you get on your tax roll is already caught up now, and you tell people, hey, you're getting your meters in, you're going to get a water bill, plus you get a brand new bill, and you're going to more money in your tax roll. They just think you're screwing them.
I disagree. I don't think that.
I disagree.
Okay. People aren't going to see what's going on.
I'm sorry. I apologize. Please. Currently, the rate for typical rate on your tax roll is?
$552.36. That's currently what flat rate.
And that includes that $194.40.
That does not include the $194.40.
Where's that $194.40 charged?
It is not charged because they do not have a water meter. So those flat rate customers do not have a water meter. That rate is not charged.
But they're paying for it over there.
I am paying
You're
for
paying
it.
You're paying for
everybody
it.
Everybody with the meter.
Okay.
Everybody
right,
with the meter
right,
pays for that charge.
I apologize.
That's okay.
So I don't think that you... I'm just talking out loud, guys, for input. I don't think you really want to increase that much past that 520 that they're currently paying. If somebody compares that bill to last year's bill that they paid,
okay.
And so that would mean you would defer it out over more years. In other words, if you pick the, for example, the 48-month payback, that's 218. When that's 418, let's say the 36-month choice is right about $520, right? It's $300.194, so it's $500. Correct? So that's pretty close to what's already being taken out of their bill currently. A little bit less. They're going to look at it and go, how did I only get $20 less when I'm paying a water bill? But that might be easier to explain and easier to swallow and doesn't affect their budget as much as if we were to go with the higher, you know, increasing it to $700. So when they looked at last year's bill, wait a minute, I'm getting a water bill and I'm paying $200 a month more? Why? I'd like to see it right in that $500 range.
Is there any issue, let's say we went with the 36 or the 48 month, is there a cash flow issue for the town of Discovery Bay?
There could be potentially.
Okay.
It just depends on our well. What are we going to do for our water well? We're going to have to build a well. We did not build storage tanks yet. I don't know if they're going to be coming or we're going to need those. And so those are the two things to consider.
Okay.
So, and, you know, we're going to be looking at a budget for what it's going to cost for some of these repairs due to infrastructure. I don't know what that cost is going to be yet also. So there are some considerations to think about right now.
The other thing that if I can add is just as a base starting point, the rates for most of the homeowners for water and sewer together for next year, is it 135? Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So for everybody, because of the rates that you already approved, It's going to go up for everybody, regardless if we did the meter project or not, is $135. So then the cost of the meter project then would be on top of that. And I just think that that's a factor to consider of how much sort of a one-year bump can people handle.
And the $197 right. account charge or something like that. You're going to want to reward this town to do that.
And the other part that's, I think, important, I think, that I've learned as part of being here, one of the reasons that some pieces are put on the property tax bill versus, and why I think also it's placing the meter charge on the property tax bill makes sense, is think about cases where we have a tenant and we have a homeowner. What if the tenant is not paying their water bill? Well, then the water gets shut off. Well, then what happens if it's on the water bill, the meter is? So then they're not paying the meter. All of a sudden we have a single homeowner where now we have a different billing system because they've had 3 months added to their system. By placing the meter on the property tax bill, then we know that we're guaranteed payment and it bifurcates it from the water use and the desire, the need to shut off water every now and then.
I think I'm in agreement that I'd like to see it placed on the meter charge onto the county tax roll, and I agree with Kevin that if we keep it around the $500-something line to do a 3-year payback, it's going to be much easier for the homeowner. Then they only have to concentrate on their water usage. They're not getting confused with, well, I had to pay a meter, didn't have to pay a meter, whatever. And I think it's much more easily handled financially, accounting-wise, for staff when they're doing the exact same thing with the new meters as they are with the existing meters. We don't have a two-prong type of thing. So I would vote for the property tax on the meters.
And if I understand that correctly, in 3 years, then their tax rolls basically drops in half, 218, 180, 190, whatever. I would propose that we accept the 36-month plan myself.
Yeah, I agree
to
tax roll
36
months.
Okay.
Okay. That's fine.
All
in favor? Hey, look, it's not palatable for anybody, and we're going to have to do we're going to have to provide the education that's needed. We know that going in. No matter how we present it, it's a tough pill to swallow.
I think you're going to
have
some
screaming. No.
It's going to be
Anyway.
So I thank you very much for the input. We very much appreciate it. I know that these are weighty items to have. There was a lot of information that staff spent a lot of time to try to get this information to you. We will bring you updates, and we'll be watching the budget part very closely. Finally, that's not bad. I thought it was 6 to 7:30. I was hoping that we would get out sooner, but there was a lot to go through. Anything else from you? Any questions, any concerns, anything else? I heard about communicating on billing very carefully. We will.
If you could let us know when you plan dates for those communities.
I will, yes. We're planning to have several sessions probably in December, so folks that are available in the morning, the afternoon, and the evening, and that's how we'll design those. Yeah.
I would like to commend staff for all of the hard work that you've done behind the scenes to get us to this point today.
And Rudolph and Skolman Eating for all your hard work, Justin. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Yeah. And pass that along to all the folks
I will.
Who are not here.
Everybody on that table organization.
Yeah.
The organizational chart, which includes all the employees on that.
Yeah, it includes everybody in the district. Yeah.
Education.
So,
yes.
Any other comments?
Anything else?
Did we lose our book? For the gavel.
Oh, yeah.
then the back.
Yeah. Anything else? Okay. Very good. Thank you.